Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll have Corey Curtis coming up at 8 o'clock, so looking forward to that. So, Joe, we've discussed a lot of the plan for the Nashville Predators this offseason. Barry Trotz coming in, Andrew Burnett now coming in as head coach. And what do you do with this roster as you move forward? You got 7 picks coming up in the top 83 picks in the draft here in a couple of weeks. You got 13 picks overall in the draft. They've created cap space for themselves with the selling off that they did at the deadline. So options is the word that we keep coming back to with Barry Trotz and what he's got at his disposal here. And we've talked about, could they be a player in free agency? Could they use draft capital that they have to move up in the draft? Or a third scenario that we've talked about, Joe, is, are there teams out there that have younger players that are either number one, cap strapped, and have to have players come available that way, or number two, cannot get a deal worked out with some of their younger RFA forwards that the Predators could target? And it looks like there is a chance that there could be a younger restricted free agent forward that could potentially become available at some point this offseason. And I'm speaking of Alex DeBrincat, currently of the Ottawa Senators. Now, Alex DeBrincat is 25 years old. He began his career with Chicago. He was traded to Ottawa last offseason and scored 27 goals last year, 66 points with the Senators. He has scored 40 goals twice before in his career, including in 21-22 for just a terrible Chicago team. Scored 41 goals, had 78 points, was one of the few bright spots on that team a couple of years ago for the Chicago Blackhawks. And Pierre LeBrun of The Athletic put this out there over the weekend, and here was just a snippet of the piece that Pierre LeBrun put out there. Quote, "My understanding is that Alex DeBrincat's camp, led by agent Jeff Jackson, has given Senators GM Pierre Dorion a short list of preferred destinations in case Ottawa decides to go the trade route with the pending RFA winger. Dorion doesn't have to trade DeBrincat to one of those teams. He can trade him anywhere he wants. But if the idea is to maximize the return on a trade by having DeBrincat signed to a contract extension as part of it, obviously it makes sense to play ball. Think about the Matthew Tkachuk situation from last year." And then LeBrun goes on to say, "I don't know for sure which teams are on DeBrincat's list, but I would bet it includes the likes of Nashville, Vegas, and Dallas." Then says everybody wants to play in Vegas. "I wonder about a team like Detroit. It wouldn't surprise me if the Red Wings would be of interest to DeBrincat as well." But LeBrun did include Nashville, Vegas, and Dallas. Now, one thing stands out to me about that. All those states are no state income tax there. So that's part of the equation there, I'm sure. But what do you make of the idea of maybe Alex DeBrincat being available this offseason? If the Senators can't come to a deal with him, they've got an ownership situation going on right now that is complicating things even further. And if he is available and the Predators are on his list, like LeBrun suspects that they could be, how attractive is an Alex DeBrincat to Barry Trotz, do you think, this offseason?
I would have to think there'd be, you know, some raised eyebrows there. It's interesting phrasing, you know, by Pierre there. He would bet it includes the likes of Nashville, Vegas, and Dallas. Like you said, so in Vegas, yeah, like he says, everyone wants to play in Vegas. You mentioned the tax. Does it also have just something to do with, like, being in warm weather?
Maybe.
You know, is that something that's been expressed? But then he also says, "I wonder about a team like Detroit."
Right.
Wouldn't surprise me if the Red Wings would be of interest in him. So I don't know, like, if this, you know, is it, I still don't know how much this is based in, like, a discussion without seeing the list, you know, or are there some indications of that, or is it really just, like, kind of guessing? But, yeah, if you're Nashville, he could help you a lot. You talk about bringing him in here. You might be talking about different kind of expectations for this team next year.
Well, I don't know. Look, I don't know what's going through Pierre LeBrun's mind as he writes this piece. I find it difficult to believe that he would specifically throw team names out there if he hadn't at least heard that those would be possibilities, like Nashville, Vegas, and Dallas. Now, again, he says He doesn't know for sure which teams are on DeBrinket's list, but I doubt he's just pulling Nashville, Vegas, and Dallas out of thin air, would be my guess.
Right, right. Yeah, so, look, I think – I mean, that's the thing. Like, how much is he worth right now? Like you said, he's only 25, very productive player. Is he the type of player that you kind of drop everything and say, oh, okay, this changes things. Is there any sort of red flag with DeBrinket?
Well, it's interesting you say that because, I mean, Joe, you'll recall we were having a discussion very similar to this about a year ago. About a year ago, we had a discussion very similar to this involving Matthew Tkachuk and right. whether or not the Predators should pursue Matthew Tkachuk. Would the Predators be on Matthew Tkachuk's list as he was trying to get out of Calgary? And ultimately, we know what happened. He ended up signing with Florida, and Vegas was on the list. St. Louis was on the list. I think Tampa Bay, Colorado, and one other one, Carolina, was there. But Jeremy Rutherford, who is connected with the Blues, and obviously Tkachuk's family has a history in St. Louis based on his father playing there. He's kind of in with the Tkachuks. Jeremy Rutherford has said both on our show and a couple of months ago on the Predators radio broadcast with Nick Kieser that Tkachuk at one point did consider Nashville. So Nashville was on his thought process, on his radar. I would not put Matthew Tkachuk and Alex DeBrinket on the same tier. Like, Tkachuk to me is 100% that kind of game-changing player. Alex DeBrinket is a goal scorer, a pure goal scorer. And there's nothing wrong with that. The Predators could use a goal scorer. I mean, he scored 40 twice in his career. And you got to keep in mind, in 2020/2021, he scored 32, but that was a shortened season. He scored 32 in 52 games. So, you know, he's a guy that's got 40, 50 goal talent. I mean, there's no question about that. Now, he's not much of a playmaker. I mean, the assists don't really pile up, but you're not paying Alex DeBrinket to be a playmaker. You're paying him to finish. So it's not the same guy. Like, they're not the same player out there, but it's a different way to go about it. Like, Alex DeBrinket is a legitimate top six finisher of the puck, and the Predators certainly don't have enough of those. They could use more of those. I would be really interested to see what his price tag looks like, because I agree with, like, if you're Ottawa and you're wanting to, and you end up, you know, coming to the realization that you're not going to work out a long-term deal with him and you've got to trade him, it does make a lot of sense to play ball with him in terms of trading him where he wants to go, just because of the contract extension that would then go along with that and the return you could get. So that's the other thing. Like, if you're the Predators, like, sure, it wouldn't be just trading for him. You would then be signing him to a contract extension after that.
Yeah, I mean, you're committing to him being a central part of your team. So it's got to work on every level. But yeah, like, yeah, I mean, the pure goal scorer is not something that's been in these parts too much here. So, I mean, I think there's reason for interest, and then of course the question is what's coming, what's going to them? What is this? Is this the goalie trade?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, you know, DeBrinket, I watch him play, and he's really good. And, I mean, last year even, I would say from a statistical standpoint, was probably a bit of a disappointment with him. I mean, it sounds funny to say that because you'll say, oh, 27 goals. That's not bad. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy that, like I said, has 40, 50 goal talent. So he played in all 82 games last year. And he had 27 goals. And look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I watched a ton of Ottawa Senators hockey last year. I mean, when you start to think about and list off most irrelevant franchises in sports, it doesn't take very long to get to them on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't watch a ton of DeBrinket last year, but I have watched a ton of him over his career, given the fact that he played in Chicago. And, I mean, look, Predators fans should know firsthand. I mean, the guy's dangerous, and he could be a really big weapon for this team. What would it cost to get him? Especially if there's a contract extension involved with it, I don't know. And also, like, what does the money look like with him? He is 25, so he's a younger guy that you could sign him to an extension, and just because maybe your team's not ready to compete for a cup next year, he could still be a part of the solution as you move forward here. But how much money are you willing to give to yet another guy that, by the way, is a winger and is not a centerman. So how much does that factor into it if you're Trotz as well?
Right, right. And last year, bad team. So, you know, player plays for a team that bad, you know, you have to sometimes you're just like, you know, there just wasn't much going on. But does it speak to some kind of, you know, step back or a concern or whatever that the production went where it went?
I mean, it's, you know, like I said, the Ottawa Senators, they weren't great. They did get Claude Giroux, and Claude Giroux is, you know, they've got Brady Tkachuk there. So, I mean, they've got some pieces, but they're certainly not a, you know, a juggernaut by any stretch of the imagination. So I don't know. I mean, if your down year is 66 points and 27 goals, you'd probably still take that if you're the Predators. But the money that he's going to want, you need him scoring 40, 45 goals somewhere in that neighborhood. 615-737-1025, our phone number. So we've thrown it out there. Alex DeBrincat, maybe potentially on the move this offseason in Ottawa. Maybe the Predators are on the list for potential trade destinations that DeBrincat has given the Ottawa Senators. Would you consider it if you're Barry Trotz and the Predators? How serious would you be about the pursuit of Alex DeBrincat? We'll take your thoughts on that. 615-737-1025. We'll continue that conversation next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, where their advanced pay by TJ option can save you thousands when selling your home. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook, live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Throwing it out there, if you're Barry Trotz and the Predators, would you be interested in Alex DeBrincat if he becomes available from Ottawa? Pierre LeBrun putting it out there that DeBrincat's camp has given the Senators a short list of preferred destinations in case a trade happens this offseason with the pending RFA winger. And this is the quote from Pierre LeBrun. Quote, "I don't know for sure which teams are on DeBrincat's list, but I would bet it includes the likes of Nashville, Vegas, and Dallas, and I wonder about a team like Detroit. Wouldn't surprise me if the Red Wings will be of interest to DeBrincat," end quote from Pierre LeBrun there. So Nashville included on the list that Pierre LeBrun believes could be a part of DeBrincat's interest there. Taking your thoughts on that, 615-737-1025. Now, Joe, in terms of what it could cost, and I had Adam Vingan sent me this over the break in terms of an article from the Hockey News, and it goes through like different destinations for DeBrincat and trade packages that some of these teams could put together. And you know, with some teams it's like a couple of prospects and a couple of picks. With other teams it's a roster player. With the Predators, it's one for one. It's Alex DeBrincat and Juuse Saros, and that's the trade that the Hockey News has put together. So then the question becomes, like, if you're Barry Trotz, would you do that? Like, is Alex DeBrincat the right guy to trade your goaltender for? That's the question that comes up then. What do you make of that the Hockey News put out there? Just one for one, straight up, DeBrincat for Juuse Saros.
It's interesting. I wondered if it would be too much different from just, you know, one for one on that. Bingen also texting me, by the way, that DeBrincat's from Michigan, which would explain, I guess, in theory, the Red Wings' interest. But yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I mean, look, I like a proven player, proven producer, young, someone that can be a centerpiece of what you're trying to do offensively. I mean, I like that better than picks and uncertainties. So in that way, I'm with D-Mace on this. D-Mace is staunchly against trading Saros at all. I mean, to me, it's like you got to have something you know what you're getting back. Is that enough? Could you get DeBrincat in a pick, DeBrincat in a prospect? Or yeah, that's the thing. I mean, to me, it seems like you should get more than that. But I understand that I may be unrealistic on that.
I'm not going to outright say no, that I wouldn't do it. I would think about it. But, you know, I was talking with Adam too. If I'm trading Juuse Saros, I want a centerman. Like that would be why I'm trading Saros, is to have somebody come in that could be a number one option for you at center. Or a really, really high-end winger, one of the two? And is Alex DeBrincat a really, really high-end winger? I mean, you could make the argument. He's scored 40 a couple of times. He's 25 years old. Like I said, in 2021, he had 32 goals in 52 games. So he's right around like a 40, 45-goal guy. You know, is that super high-end? The goal-scoring part of it is, yes. Now, the point total, I mean, his career high in points is 78, which is good, but you're talking about a guy that's not even a point-per-game player at that point. So, I don't know. Like, I think a lot of that, a lot of, like, DeBrincat's value there depends on, like, the eye of the beholder. I'm not going to outright dismiss it. I will say if I had my preference and it was just straight up one-for-one UC Saros, I would like for it to be a top-end centerman rather than a winger.
Right, and Barry Trotz has talked many times about that, finding that centerman, right? I mean, so you know that's a priority. It's also, there's just some of this with DeBrincat. It's how, as much as there's a focus from the Preds, from Trotz, on offense and, you know, playing kind of a different style and, you know, taking the big swings, all that stuff, there's still the question of how Trotz and how Brunette, how they feel about DeBrincat fitting into everything. You know, because to me, if you're going to make a trade like this, if you're going to play your hand and move Saros and move on to the Askarov era, which is a gamble in itself, you got to make sure what you're getting back is going to be, you know, is going to be perfect on every front. And that's where, you know, I don't know how DeBrincat is viewed. I mean, you know, when a guy gets moved like that, sometimes you wonder a little bit, right?
Yep.
I mean, it happens. Doesn't necessarily mean anything, but like, is he, you know, how is he as a teammate? You know, his responsibility, all these things that, you know, aren't as important for someone like him, but they still matter to some extent.
Well, I do remember when Chicago traded him, he was 24. So when the Blackhawks traded him, he was 24 years old. And I remember thinking, what are they doing? Like, I understand that they're, you know, they made it pretty clear heading into last year that they were going the rebuild route, right? But, I mean, he's a guy that, think about the different scenario where they keep him. Maybe they're not as bad as they were a year ago, but, I mean, they were pretty bad with him. Like, they could have been close to as bad as they were a year ago. And think about him with, like, Connor Bedard. Like, that'd be pretty good. I mean, probably wouldn't.
They weren't bleeping the bed as well.
Right. Like, it may not have played out that way. It just, the fact that they traded him when they did at his age was intriguing to me. And this situation is different. Like, Ottawa, I don't think, wants to trade him. But if he's not going to sign a long-term deal with you, like at some point you've got to maximize your value. And Ottawa, first off, Ottawa's got a tough time keeping free agents anyway, just based on the condition of their franchise right now. And then secondly, you know, they have the ownership situation and they got a couple different people trying to buy the Ottawa Senators after their previous owner passed away. Ryan Reynolds is one of them. Snoop Dogg is a part of a group that's in another one. So we'll see what happens and all that. But that's not resolved at this point, so I do wonder, you know, DeBrincat, I don't think, is going to sign there. And how quickly do you pull the trigger on that? I mean, the Senators don't have to do it this offseason. They could wait to the deadline next year. I mean, there's several different ways it could play out, but I have a feeling he's going to be on the move at some point.
And they'd probably rather do it this offseason, right?
I would think so, just to get more value out of it, I would think.
But, well, it's certainly, I mean, it's an intriguing name. It's certainly not one you just dismiss if everything fit. But, you know, what would Preds fans' reaction be if it's Saros straight up for DeBrincat and that's that?
Well, we have, I mean, there's a couple on the text line that are like, I would do it. No questions asked. We have one on the text line that says, nope, not a one-for-one. Need more for Ottawa if I'm trading Saros. He's an RFA. Still got to pay him. If the ask is Saros, then I'm out. So it kind of split down the middle. Matt and Mount Juliet says, DeBrincat's not a center, and he only has two seasons with 40-plus goals. No thanks. Not a one-for-one trade of Saros, at least. Now, again, yes, he's not a center. He only has two seasons of 40-plus goals. Now, that's one more season than anybody else on your roster has of 40-plus goals. And Again, the other one was 32 and 52 games in 2021. So he's really got three, but I hear you.
Yeah.
And, not, by the way, I keep saying 32 and 52 games. It wasn't because he was hurt that they played 52 games. It was a shortened season.
Right. It was that shortened season. Right. Yeah.
So
it's interesting.
It's very interesting. But it highlights the point, Joe, whether it's DeBrinket or somebody else, this happens every offseason with a restricted free agent or a cap-strapped team. Somebody gets available, and somebody becomes available out there that maybe you don't think about heading into the offseason, and the Predators are now at least positioned to entertain something like that if they want to.
Yeah, and that's part of what so many things that could happen this offseason, and maybe nothing that big will, but there's a lot of possibilities for Barry Trotz.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll continue this discussion. Got more of your thoughts on that. We'll also get into Game 3 coming up tonight between Tennessee and Southern Miss with a trip to Omaha on the line as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezvik here with you on this Monday morning. The Nashville Sounds are having a block party on Junior Gillum Way from 3 to 5 in honor of 615 week this Saturday. There will be live music, inflatables, balloon artists, food trucks, hair braiding, and more. This is free before that night's game coming up this Saturday, so looking forward to that. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Joe, real quickly, just a couple of more thoughts on the DeBrinket trade scenario for the Preds. John from White House on the text line says, we talked a month or so ago about Soros for Nylander. Would you rather have DeBrinket or Nylander if you're giving up Soros? This from John in White House. That's an interesting one. What do you make of that one, Joe Rex Road?
I think I'd go DeBrinket. I just with Nylander, it's close, but I just feel like Nylander has really benefited from great players around him. And I know something you get into those discussions, and it's like when we have the quarterback discussion, like find me the all time great quarterback who just had crap around him, right. You know, and you can go around and around on that, but I think. Just a little. I mean, just the Preds really haven't had a pure goal scorer.
No. I mean, especially a young one. I mean, it's been like Philip Forsberg is really good. I don't know that I would describe Philip Forsberg as a pure goal scorer, and DeBrinket is a pure goal scorer. There's no question about it. Josh on the text line says, "I'm out on trading Soros unless it's Austin Matthews or Connor Bedard." We had another texter earlier talk about, you know, reading a piece over the weekend about the Predators maybe trading their whole draft for Connor Bedard. It all sounds great. Mm-hmm. I don't think Chicago's doing it. That's the only holdup.
Yeah, because that's just what you want. Like too many people in your organization for spots in giving away the generational talent.
But hey, if they did it, would you trade your whole draft for Connor Bedard, Joe Rexrod?
Yes.
Yeah, I would too. I absolutely would.
Yep.
615-737-1025. Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and welcome in Weston in Nashville. Weston, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, guys. So I'm hearing the idea of this trade Soros for a one-for-one type of deal. Now, I've seen the Predators, especially towards the end of last year, a lot of the young talent look good. Given the circumstances, and I feel like if we get to bring it in a way to where we don't have to trade Soros, I feel like we could go for it next year. But I feel like you have to keep Soros if you're going to be in that contention in the next 1 to 2 years. If not, we're going to be looking at another 4 or 5 years down the road before we're ready to compete. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Look, I hear what Weston's saying there. Let me put it to you this way. If the Preds somehow got Alex DeBrinket and they didn't have to give up UC Soros and all they had to give up was maybe some prospects and a couple of picks, does that make the Predators a Stanley Cup contender next year? I don't think so. Like I still think they're a couple of pieces away. Now, you know, can Cody Glass grow into a legitimate top centerman? Can Tommy Novak repeat what he did last year? Does Andrew Brunette unlock something with Duchesne and Johansson in the last year or two of their deals? Like, all those things are questions that I don't know, and that could change kind of the timeline or the answer on some of this stuff. But my guess is, like, even right now, if you got DeBrinket and Saros wasn't involved, you're probably still not a Stanley Cup contender at that point. Now, you should be a playoff team. I mean, you should absolutely be a team that's competing for a playoff spot and making the playoffs, but I don't know that I would go Stanley Cup contender at that point. So, I don't know. I just, to me, you could be looking at 2, 3, 4 years away either way when it comes to either trading the goaltender or keeping the goaltender.
And I don't know that it's a lock either the other way, that it's 4 or 5 years. I mean, if you're trading Saros, to me, you're hoping that starting in the 24-25 season and maybe really taking off in 25-26, you have the next goalie ready to be really good. So if other good choices are made and young players are develop at the rate you hope they do, then that – and then also you still have cap space and picks, prospects to work with, you could have a really good team in a couple of years.
So something to keep an eye on.
In theory.
Yeah, something to keep an eye on out there. Look, we'll see. We're in the beginning stages of the Alex DeBrincat conversation, but I did find it interesting that, according to Pierre LeBrun, he believes Nashville could be on the list in terms of a preferred destination, so we'll see what happens on that front. Joe, game three coming up tonight between Tennessee and Southern Miss. The winner going to the College World Series. Tennessee loses game one. They come back to win game two yesterday after falling behind 4-0. And now are set up for game three tonight at 5 o'clock down there in Hattiesburg where you are. What do you make of how the Vols look, how well positioned they are heading into this game to win it and advance to Omaha for the second time in the past 3 years?
Well, it's very dangerous because, on paper now, this is huge advantage Vols going into today. I mean, they have Drew Beam starting. Chase Burns has only had to throw one inning. Seth Halvorsen only had to throw 40 pitches yesterday. They have a couple other bullpen arms who haven't, are available. So, like, they basically have anybody they want that they could trot out today. And meanwhile, Southern Miss is pretty much tapped out on their best pitchers. So, I mean, it's, on paper, it looks very good for Tennessee. You know, the top two starters have gone for Southern Miss, and they do have now Armistead is their big arm who was wild yesterday and got pulled quickly. And so, Scott Barry said, I told him, like, today, I mean, they probably want him to go a bunch today because Nico Mazza, the sophomore, is going to start for them. I mean, his numbers are not especially good. I mean, this is a guy who, Tennessee should be able to have success against him. He's sitting there with he's got a 4.13 ERA. It's not bad, but I mean, he's clearly the third best starter, and there's a drop off from their ace to the two and now two to three against a couple of their other best bullpen arms have been tapped out for sure. Storm, what the heck is his name? He won that first game for them. I want to make sure I get his full name. I just know it was Storm, which is very fitting for this weekend. Justin Storm.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Justin Storm, 6'7" lefty. I mean, they just rode him all the way, which is probably what they want to do today with Armistead. But look, it's just, I mean, Tennessee, if Tennessee gets a good Drew Beam start, and they did not get Andrew Lindsey's best. It looked like they weren't getting Chase Dolander's best. And then all of a sudden they get the lead and he locks it down. But if they get a good Drew Beam start, and now you can come with Chase Burns for several, you can do a lot of different things out of that. It's advantage Vols, but it's baseball, and you start thinking about that stuff, then you're in trouble. I mean, this is still home field matters. There's a lot of emotion here. It's a rowdy scene, and they're playing for this is their coach's last game if they lose today.
Well, and when they got down 4-0 yesterday, with the way that they were hitting the ball, or maybe more specifically the way they weren't hitting the ball, I thought they're in deep trouble. And then all of a sudden you get the 6-run inning, and then Dolander shuts it down after that. You know, can you get the bats going a little earlier today? We'll see if Tennessee can do that. But you're right, from a pitching standpoint, and this is why it's what we've talked about for weeks now with this team. Like, when you get into a super regional and you got to go deep into your with your pitching staff, Tennessee is well equipped to do it. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to play out well, but on paper, they're well equipped to do it heading into today. And like you said, Beam's available. You can go back to Chase Burns if you have to, and we'll see whether or not they can get it done. But I thought the 6-run response yesterday against Tanner Hall was pretty unbelievable, given the way Tennessee was hitting the ball before that.
It was. Blake Burke has, I would say, you know, Blake Burke's had a little bit of a disappointing, you know, sophomore season.
Yep.
And, man, that bomb was just a no-doubt. And it was, as they said, you know, as Scott Barry and Tanner Hall said, you know, like, that was not like, that was a slider that was down. He just, he was waiting on it, and he just got it in the right spot. And it was, I mean, this guy's asking Vitello after the game, kind of an old timer around here, is like, basically like that got to the church on one hop.
Yeah.
You know, St. Thomas Church is over in right field. And it's like, he's like, that's one of the longest home runs ever hit here.
I think the official tally was 479, right? 479.
479.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it was just like, everyone just stood and watched it. Like, what in the heck was that? But then you have like a guy like Cal Stark, a 186 hitter who gets a walk and to start a 2-out rally. And then, you know, Jared Dickey with the huge hit to, and then, you know, then Southern Miss errors, and they just kind of fell apart. But pretty stunning. And it, you know, it's not, it wasn't quite the Clemson win, but similar kind of thing where they look like they're done, and then they figure out a way to come back. So now that they have got themselves in position, can they put together a really good game? And because look, if they're going to go beyond this and go into Omaha and do anything, it's about those starting pitchers. You know, they got what they needed from Dolander. Can they get what they need from Beam today?
So have you enjoyed your stay in Hattiesburg? You thinking about buying a vacation home down there, or maybe renting an Airbnb from Favre? Like, how we doing down there?
Ooh, well, you know, I haven't yet gone to the volleyball arena.
Maybe later today.
It's probably really nice.
I would hope so. I would hope it'd be really nice. Although, I mean, the Vols were crouching under the stands yesterday trying to avoid the sunlight between games. So I guess Favre doesn't let other people go into the volleyball arena. I don't know. But, yeah, I like Hattiesburg. It's great. I'll have more to say about Hattiesburg next.
Looking forward to that. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 745. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 1025 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
You know, obviously they made some plays. We had a hard time staying in front of them at the end of the day. I'm just sick and tired of our guys getting smashed down there. Smashed! We'll get ready to play Tennessee. We're incredibly outmanned at the end. At 3-4 guys on the bench in foul trouble. Joke!
Auburn head coach Bruce Pearl joining us.
Yes, the standard of ranting set by Bruce Pearl a few months ago. Rex Road tries to live up to it every day, and it is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. Joe Rex Road, the floor is yours. I turn things over to you as the bright sunshine of Hattiesburg, Mississippi is behind you.
Yeah, well, I open the curtains here, because for those watching the stream, I want to, this could be a real issue, but I'm gonna try to see if I can show you the view from my hotel room. Let me see if I can do this. Just hold on one second.
Okay. Joe Rex wrote is displaying his view. By the way, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook, where you could check this thing out as Joe Rexroad, live from Hattiesburg, Mississippi, is preparing for Game 3 of the Super Regional between Tennessee and Southern Miss. So is that the Tennessee team bus behind you? Wow.
Indeed, indeed it is.
What of you?
GB Joe. Yes.
Yeah, well, that exactly. So it's great because I have the Tennessee team bus here. It's out my window. Like yesterday, it was 9 a.m. and I was about to head over there for the 11 a.m. resumption of the rain delayed game, and they hadn't left yet. And I'm like, well, I guess I won't leave yet. Like, if the team hasn't gone, and then they started getting on the bus, and I'm like, well, maybe I could like follow them and like with the police escort and like, you know. But so I waited a little bit, but it's nice. So I can see what's going on with the Vols. It was lucky. I just went to the Starbucks and no one was in line. I guess these guys haven't woken up yet, which is good. I mean, you know, who would have known yesterday? I mean, the game's over and it's, you know, early evening. And of course we're all saying, okay, so what do you think the game time will be? And the Tennessee people are saying, I mean, have no idea. It could be 11 a.m. It could be 1 p.m. It could be 2. It could be 5. It could be 8. Could be anything. And so hours passed. So you're Tony Vitello right now. You have a baseball team here at this hotel. And, you know, they do meetings. They do film. They do breakfast. They do a routine, you know. And depending on your game time the next day, that could be very, very different.
Yeah.
So hours pass, continue to text the Tennessee people, continue. Then you start seeing Southern Miss official accounts say, gosh, 9:37, still don't have a game time. And then the Tennessee and Southern Miss accounts are like kind of complaining, you know, with each other on Twitter. And, of course, the top complainer in media, Mike Wilson, is just absolutely throwing an absolute tantrum. And, you know, I went to bed. I had no idea when this game was going to be played today. And here's the thing. If you had a window, which I think is clear, but basically what I think happened is that Stanford won. Had Stanford lost, this would be the only game. And so they were going to make this the primetime game, right? This was going to be the 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern game if it was alone. Stanford does win, so they get the later game, so this game's at 5. Okay. So you know what you do? You tell the people who are part of these teams, it's going to be one or the other. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
It's going to be one or the other. And then they can at least have a little bit of a window and a little bit of an idea. But you know what Tennessee got told? Not one damn thing. You know why? Because the NCAA's incompetence, again, is on full display here. I mean, the way that they actually were trying to possibly play game one and finish it Saturday was embarrassing. I mean, they got a couple reps here, and it's like they're trying to force something to happen. And by the way, speaking of weather, it's great that TV people just do control everything. But if they had looked at the forecast, they'll see that there's a great chance we have thunderstorms here today. So that then that nice time slot that they have is going to be like pickleball reruns. How does that help you? How does that help you to schedule the game at a time where we're going to be absolutely in a monsoon here? It's just like
pickleball's a great sport, must say. Must point that out.
Yeah. Right, but if it's not live, you know, it's just so much better live.
That's true.
It's just like have a little bit of courtesy and tell people, okay, it's going to be one of these two, so just plan accordingly. No, instead, not one thing said. Also, have some common sense and say, when could the game actually be played, that it could, because actually the later time here is probably a better idea, or 11 a.m., which we'd all prefer, you'd get the game in before the rain comes in. Instead, let's put it right smack dab in the middle of the terrible weather. So it's just, I mean, the NCAA has been reduced to basically they run these tournaments now, and they can't even do that competently. I mean, I don't have any beef about this being in Hattiesburg. The way that the selection is done, it's fine. It was 50-50. Now, the selection shouldn't be done that way. It should purely be done by seeding all the teams going into a tournament, and then whoever was higher seeded between these two teams hosts. That's what you should do. But, of course, they'd rather keep it the way that they have it so that they can just sort of make decisions for reasons. But this has been an embarrassing display by the NCAA, the way that they're running this thing right now.
Well, it's ridiculous that you could get as late as, like, I guess my question would be, like, what were they going to do if the game was at 11? Like, they just, by the way, guys, good morning. You're playing in 3 hours. Have fun. We'll see you over at the field.
Exactly. Well, exactly. That's what Tennessee's. I mean, it was like, it's like, I mean, I guess better go to bed. Better go to bed. Get an early wake-up call. Hey, guys, you better get over to the field. Yeah, exactly. And that's all you have to do is say, just wipe out the early time slot, okay? Don't worry about that. It's going to be either or this. Okay, great. No, nothing. They were very frustrated. Southern Miss was very frustrated. And again, it's just, why does it have to be this way? Like, communicate with people a little bit.
Well, this whole process to me has just been ridiculous. And I hear you on the selection to go down to Hattiesburg. I don't necessarily have a problem with them playing the series in Hattiesburg. But to your point, like, the fact that this is just left up to, well, I guess we'll just figure it out and somebody will tell us where they're playing rather than just seeding the tournament and having a pretty clear path of where things are going to be anyway is ridiculous to me. Now, I get it. Like you said last week, this is not college football, so they're not printing money left and right with the way that they do things. So there are different considerations, and I get all that. But the fact that we've gone from the Hattiesburg / Knoxville debacle where we didn't really know where it was going to be until Monday of last week to now all this stuff playing out with nobody can figure out when the game's going to start the next day, you know, a little bit, you know, before the team even goes to sleep the night before. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, it's got to be handled better than this in the future.
And again, because there's been a lot of back and forth between the fan bases and all that stuff. This is Southern Miss is just as much the Southern Miss people are trying to run this regional. They're just as much in the dark as everybody else. They're like, what are we doing here, folks? They don't. It's the NCAA, but it's the NCAA saying, hey, you know, TV exec, you know, kicking your feet up and just making random decisions. Can you tell me something? Pretty ridiculous.
Gordon on the text line says, regarding the location, doesn't it come down to two schools bidding to host? I read that somewhere, but if you think so, Tennessee would have hosted. This from Gordon from Nashville on the text line.
Yes, they both put in bids. I mean, there are some things about this facility here that are better than Lindsey Nelson. Like, this facility actually has a big press box with suites and stuff like that, a lot of suites. So it's and they get about 1,000 more people. They get about 1,000 more people per game than Tennessee does. So in baseball, that's a significant number. I mean, it's 6,000 versus 5,000. So, yeah, but that's, you know, now like people have pointed out, like, Knoxville, better hotel situation, restaurant, stuff like that. But in terms of straight up revenue from games, that's, to me, it's got to be what you're looking at, right? 1,000 more people.
It's been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. Game 3 coming up tonight between Tennessee and Southern Miss starting at 5 o'clock. So looking forward to that. We'll have Corey Curtis from News 2 coming up next. We'll get into the Tennessee Titans and the DeAndre Hopkins situation with him. But first, Joe Rexroad has a word from our friends at PhD Weight Loss.
I do have a happy rant about PhD Weight Loss because I'm down 20 in 6 weeks. I feel great, loving the food items, no pills, no gimmicks, no other suppressants. This feels good. It feels sustainable. And you know, that's a big thing, right? I mean, there are a lot of different ways to lose some weight. Can you lose the weight? Keep it off. Now, I mentioned those products. By the way, 85% of this food is provided at no additional cost. I'm loving the peanut butter chocolate cereal, pancakes, broccoli cheddar soup. Protein bars are fantastic. And this whole thing is simple. It's easy. And it's tailored to you. You have a weekly phone discussion with your coach to talk things over, talk about, you know, think, you know, there's a lot of different ways those conversations can go. Certainly certain things you want to try. Is this okay? Is that okay? You can go to a lot of different restaurants and have things that are fine on this diet. No cravings, no problem. And there's a guarantee. If you don't get within 5 pounds of that target weight at the end of your program, PhD will continue to coach you for free until you do. Check it out at myphdweightloss.com.